Voters tell us what they're paying at the gas pump will definitely influence how they will vote in the presidential election. Everyone who shared their opinions with Pittsburgh's Action News 4 want to see gas prices become a focal point in this year's presidential election. How much does that annoy you?
Oh, a lot. A lot, a lot. When things go up double compared to what it was last year, yeah.
You think so?
Yeah. Yes. We got the resources in this country. Let's use them.
Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, Michael Bloomberg. What's the thing they all have in common? They all pay a lower tax rate than a Boston public school teacher. That's not right. And it's why President Biden is taking on the billionaires. And it's why, just this week, I reintroduced my ultra-millionaires tax. If someone starts a business and makes it big, good for them. My bill says that if you make it big, I mean really big, I mean more than $50 million, then pitch in 2 cents on every dollar over $50 million. And why? So everyone else can have a chance. That's it. It's simple. After all, these billionaires made their fortunes on roads we all paid to maintain and with workers we all paid to educate. And what can we get when millionaires and billionaires finally pay a fair share? Universal childcare and pre-K, tuition-free technical school and public college. And we can make the kind of investments in our communities that will give everyone a fighting chance.
What is carbon dioxide?
I went to high school, but that's carbon dioxide is a gas.
Okay.
I'm not a professional to talk about carbon dioxide so much, but.
Well, you want us to abolish it, right?
No, I. There's always going to be carbon dioxide.
Right. So what is it you want us to do? Let me back up, because I mean, you're here as an expert. Tell me more about what carbon dioxide is.
I'm here as an expert cross-country skier who sees the changes in my winters and the landscape that I live in Alaska. And so carbon dioxide is what I see it as is, you know, it's a gas that exists in our atmosphere. And what,
is it the major part of our atmosphere?
Or? It's a huge part of our atmosphere, yes.
It's actually a very small part of our atmosphere.
Well, okay.
We've also got to go upstream. We've got to make sure that the automobiles are not so easy to steal so that they're a tempting, attractive nuisance for young people. And, you know, right now we are investigating two major automakers because their cars are dramatically too easy to steal for young people.
At about 1:30, container ship struck the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which I've been over many, many times commuting from the state of Delaware to our trainer in the car.
And welcome back to the Unregulated Podcast. This is episode number 175.
Yo.
Today is Tuesday, March 26th, and I am your co-host, Tom Pyle.
And I'm your co-host, it's Mike McKenna, and I have to be honest with you, I had a great big giant bowl of cappuccino before I came over here, so I'm pretty, pretty jumpy.
Exciting, exciting. Now, first and foremost, I understand that there are still about six people unaccounted for on the bridge. The Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse yesterday in the middle of the night. Our hopes and our prayers are out to those in the hope that they can be found. It's not looking good, though, at this point with that water being as cold as it is. So.
Yeah, I believe they're highway workers, right? People they managed to flag off any of the drivers, I hesitate to say this, but it feels like a fairly heroic action.
Well, thankfully they called that in somehow from the big ship.
They called Mayday.
Yeah,
called a Mayday. So that ship was in trouble, and until we find otherwise, I'm always going to have it in the back of my head that this thing could be a cyber thing, right?
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff flying around. I'm not going to get into that. I will say this, though. What is left of that bridge, there was never a train track on it. Why our beloved president has to insert himself into every conversation is just completely beyond me.
I'm sorry, what did I miss?
In the last clip,
Oh. Yeah, well, you know, it
it's all like, about, dude.
You know, the Irish have a great expression for it. And you know, if he was an Irishman, I would use it against him. The Irish like to describe folks like him as having to be the bride at every wedding and the body at every funeral. That's you know, they doesn't matter whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, they just gotta be the center of attention.
Yeah, my pastor, Father Tietlow, said, because, you know, St. Patrick's Day fell on a Sunday recently.
Go on now, did it?
He said his mother said to him, if I wasn't Irish, I would be ashamed of myself. So.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is your occasional reminder that there's...
Oh, no, I didn't mean to bring that up.
This is your occasional reminder that I've lived in and among the Irish my whole life. I'm Michael McKenna. I may myself be partially Irish. I've literally never met any of them named Robin with a middle name of Robinette and a junior attached to them. Irishmen do not name their kids after themselves. I'm sorry, that just doesn't happen.
All right. So apparently, I'm going to go backwards here. Apparently,
Tom, Minnesota... I think our whole life has been going backwards.
Apparently, the Minnesota Attorney General believes that cars are just simply too easy to steal. That's the problem, Mike.
You know what we need?
He's investigating right now. He knows of at least two car companies that make their cars too damn easy to steal.
You know what we need?
Keith Ellison, ladies and gentlemen.
We need some kind of kill switch or some ability to take over a car software so we can drive it to where it wants to go. That's what we need. We need to give government just a little bit more control over where them cars are going.
You elect these people, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I'm not sure I elected Keith Ellison, but okay, I take your point.
Yes. Senator Kennedy strikes again. I wonder if maybe the Democrats should vet their witnesses a little bit better. Look, I definitely would do my homework before appearing in front of any committee.
Oh, good Lord. I mean, just do the simplest stuff, right? What's carbon dioxide? Well, I don't know, man. I'm just here to, like, talk about surfing. No, wait a minute. Skiing? You know what?
I would definitely do my homework before any committee, but certainly before Senator Kennedy.
He makes you look like a moron. I will say one thing. If he goes wrong on this carbon border adjustment tax, this carbon tax, I'm going to feel so bad because I'm really getting to like him. If he goes south on me on this one, it's going to be bad.
Are you hearing something about that?
No, but you know, it just seems like the kind of thing that might happen. And I hope he doesn't. But if I say it that way.
Fair enough. He is quite entertaining at hearings for sure. E. Warren has busted out her multimillionaire's tax. I put that in for you because I know you, in your heart, you have a little bit of sympathy for this.
The millionaires and the billionaires. I will say again, Senator Warren, I want to thank her for all her excellent work on behalf of the oil and gas industry as a lawyer for her entire career before she decided to spend her, let's say, declining years in the United States Senate. So thank you for your useful years, and I'm sorry the declining years are turning out to be more declining than useful.
My favorite part about that is it succinctly summarizes the mindset of a socialist, right? You didn't build, they built this company on our roads that we pay for. It's like going all the way back to Obama. Remember, was he talking to Joe the plumber about,
you know,
you didn't build this. You didn't build this.
I've come to a conclusion. You want to hear it?
Yeah, fire away.
I don't like anybody who has power.
I think that's a very wise conclusion.
And whether it's not
an original thought, however.
What I mean, let me expand it for just one second. It doesn't matter whether the power originates from your monopoly on violence, right? Where you're part of the government, or whether it stems from the fact that you got a million billion dollars. I don't trust or like people with power. I am a legitimate American. I think I'm the last American. That's going to be the title of my autobiography.
Your autobiography?
The last American.
No one's Yeah, hire Walter Isaacson to write your...
Either that, or it's going to be, I have some thoughts and you people are going to hear them.
That is called the Unregulated Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. So there's no reason to reinvent the wheel. All right. And of course, I just love Man on the Street. They cut to the chase. Yeah, Michigan, man. We got the resources in this country. Let's use them. That's it. It's quite simple.
Dude, this is why I love doing focus groups, because they just help you shorten the message. Like, come on, man. We got the resources. This is ridiculous. I'm starting to think that Senator Kennedy talks to these people on the regular, because he just kind of cuts through all of this stuff, right?
Yeah. All right. Any announcements today for you?
Opening season, opening gate day is 2 days from now. So now is the time when I'm going to make you pick how many games are the Yankees going to win.
All right. You're going to make me pick right this second?
Right this second. Yeah, we're not waiting anymore. Come on, man. It's something you've thought about a bunch of times. Just give us a number.
I saw their opening day pitching roster.
Oh, who'd they announce? They announced Willie Loman?
Oh, no. Not for pitching, but just who their five-starters are.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard of three of them.
Well, there's Willie Loman and Nestor Cortez and Carlos Rodon.
I didn't even see Nasty Nestor on the list, but I could be wrong. Maybe it's an older.
He's probably got a leg strain. All right, go ahead. Give me the number. Come on, man.
I'm gonna go on 97.
97? 97?
What was it? What did they win last year?
I don't know. I think 46.
They were a shade over 500, right?
I think they were a little bit better than that. I think they found up like 88 and 77, something like that. 72.
I'm gonna go 97 because I'm gonna assume that either Giancarlo and Judge are going to be injured most of the year.
Okay, let's have a separate one. Total games those two are going to appear in?
102.
Wow, that's low. Okay, the correct answer is the Yankees are going to win 88 games.
88?
88 games, and they are going to – and the two big boys are going to play in 200 games all in. They're gonna have.
Oh, you mean either of them?
No, but together.
Yeah. Okay. No, I need to reassess. I'm gonna say 200. 200. Also.
Okay. So we're gonna. Yeah. You want to do something on the Tigers here? Now's your moment.
90 games.
The Tigers. He thinks the Tigers are gonna lose 90 games.
No, win 90.
Win 90 games.
Yeah.
This is the actual professional franchise, the one in Detroit.
Yeah.
Against major league competition. Okay, our producers decided to get drunk on the Oakland's singular victory over Kentucky.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, any other thoughts on that, producer?
Producer, now's your moment.
No, it was fun, though. Tough way to leave the tournament, but happy for Greg.
They almost had a second upset, correct?
Yeah, they took NC State to overtime.
Let me tell you something. Nice. That NC State team, there's something. They should have lost their last five games, and somehow they just keep escaping. They're gonna wind up in the final four.
What if we're wrong about New York? What if they have like this insane season?
What if I flap my arms and fly to the moon?
Okay.
Let me ask you a question. What are the chances? They have no pitching.
I know, it's crazy.
And they've got a bunch of
Jordan Montgomery's still hanging out there. They didn't get Snell. It's like, what?
Well, they're never going to pick up Jordan Montgomery because it would be acknowledging a mistake, and we all know Brian Cashman can't do that yet. And the other thing is, and this is something you don't think about, but I'm going to let you think about it right now. LeMahieu's like 36 years old. He's going to have a breakdown at some point.
Well, he's already not in the lineup right now as of today.
Yeah, like so. I said, this is a team constructed by people with nostalgia for, you know, baseball 2010, right? They're not serious about playing baseball in 2024.
Yeah. Well, I have something more important. I would like to wish everybody a happy Easter day and season. This will be our last episode before Easter. And also, I caught the Mel Gibson movie for the first time. Have you seen that?
Which one?
The Passion of the Christ.
I have.
It's pretty good.
It seems a little bit
It's a little much.
Yeah, it seems a little bit in love with the violence.
Yeah. But I think that he had an intention there. Was his intention?
Yeah, I agree. It was intentional.
I think he wanted people to like really focus on it. I also caught, it was kind of a double feature. Now I also caught this movie called Risen. Did you ever see that?
No, I don't think so.
It was interesting. It was like a from the perspective of one of the Roman soldier dudes. So
one of the Roman
it wasn't bad. It was pretty good. Yeah, like the what's the technical name with
hopefully it's the centurions.
Yeah, one of the centurions. Anyhow, it wasn't bad, but they made Jesus out to be quite the hippie in that one. So this day in history in 1804. Do you have anything to say about that? Sorry.
No. This day in history, 1804.
1804.
The Lewis and Clark expedition set out for the Pacific Coast.
No, you're close though. You're close because you got Jefferson, and this is gonna make sense to you later in the episode. Today on this day, Thomas Jefferson was the guest of honor at a public party at the Senate, and led a diverse crowd in consuming an enormous loaf of bread, dubbed the Mammoth Loaf.
You're really reaching for these days in history. I mean, I was telling Alex, I felt kind of stupid, but this is, come on, man.
The giant bread was baked to go with the remnants of an enormous block of cheese. Are you aware of this event in history?
I'm not really sure it's an event in history, Tom.
2 years earlier, a group of Baptist women from Massachusetts sent Jefferson a 1,200-pound hunk of cheese in gratitude for his support of religious tolerance.
You know, I know whenever I'm willing to thank somebody for something, I send them a hunk of cheese.
And
ladies and gentlemen, the show, Graham, has gone off the rails. It's official.
Mammoth comes, of course, from the woolly mammoth who had recently been discovered. His skeleton had recently been discovered. And so the word mammoth became like this sort of meme back in the day, if you will. Anyhow, that's what happened today.
Okay.
Now, in 1812, this also happened. It was also in the political arena.
1812?
Yes, sir. Not has nothing to do with the war of.
March 26th, 1812?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
James Madison announced he wasn't running for president again.
No.
Okay.
On this day in 1812, Massachusetts Governor Jerry.
Yeah, almost certainly.
Drew districts to favor incumbents in an upcoming election, to which the Boston Gazette published a satiric cartoon that graphically transformed the districts into a famous animal, the gerrymander.
Yeah, little play on salamander.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah,
little play on salamander.
A very little play.
The gerrymander was born on this day in 1812.
It's terrifying.
In 1953, this happened. This is arguably more important than either of those two events.
The Americans, Chinese, North Koreans, South Koreans came to an agreement on a treaty location.
No, not even close. This, that wasn't the one I put here. On this day in 1953, Dr. Jonas Salk.
Polio vaccine.
Announced on national radio that he has successfully tested a vaccine against polio, the virus that causes the crippling disease. Let's see, anything else on that? That's good enough.
That's good enough. Then, I hate to say, it's a lot more important than a loaf of bread.
Well, yes, but the bread was essential to help eat the 1,200 pounds.
Shut up. Go ahead.
1979, this happened, ironically.
Don't tell me.
You can guess this one.
I bet you I can't, because I was a young man. I was a young man with my entire life ahead of me, and then I got into political.
You were already at least double digits by this.
I was in my 30s in 1979. Go ahead. Give me a hint.
On this day in 1979,
Saturday Egyptian Night Fever,
President Anwar
was killed.
Sadat
was killed.
And Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin signed a historic
Camp David Accords
peace agreement, ending 3 decades of hostilities between Egypt and Israel and establishing both diplomatic and commercial ties. Yes, indeed, sir, known as the Camp David Accords.
And for his trouble, Sadat was assassinated, what, a year later? 2 years later?
October 1981 in Cairo.
Yep.
In 2000, on this day, sir. In 2000, on
March
this day.
March of 2000? Are you serious? Yes. I can't. There's no way I can remember that. I was alive then.
On this day in 2000, Russian intelligence officer and politician Vladimir Putin was elected president of Russia. A year prior, he became acting president following Boris Yeltsin's resignation, but was elected outright on this day in 2000. Has had quite a run ever since. So,
I'm not sure about that. I mean, he's still ruling over a broken down alcoholic country where life expectancy is diminishing instead of increasing.
Specifically, his clinging of power. Yes, because of course he did change the constitution so he could run again, but there was a stint there where he turned over the presidency to some other dude and then became the prime minister again for 4 years. If you recall that,
Franklin Roosevelt was elected 4 times to president in his country. Nobody said a word about it.
Well, then they changed.
Sorry, am I allowed to say that? Is that what I'm allowed to say? I guess not. Am I allowed to point out he put people?
I know. I think one of our listeners would be happy that you focused your ire on FDR.
I just want to say, I mean, I'm not focusing my ire on him. I just want to point out he too was elected. And kept running for president until he died. And I also want to point out he put people in camps too. But
we have like 30 minutes. We got a lot of show left.
We got plenty of show. Relax.
I gotta take my kids to swimming. So, all right. Any other discussion about the bridge?
No, I don't think we know enough. I'm.
Well, not only I think our listeners are probably keenly aware that is a huge route for hazardous materials and all of our oils and gases and various chemicals and things, which will probably slow things down. Also, the port is, I believe, a pretty massive coal exporter.
Yes, the Helen Bentley Port of Baltimore. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Good old Helen.
Yeah.
And also the quite a few of our automobiles.
Yeah.
End up there before they go to the various dealerships. So this is going to be fairly disruptive, especially for the northern part of the north of the Mason-Dixon line.
It's you know what, I had this thought when I first saw it this morning. It's remarkable, right? You don't think about what humanity can manage. I mean, that bridge is an achievement that unimaginable as recently as 200 years ago, right? Unimaginable as recently as 150 years ago, and not only is it imaginable, not only did we build it, but we knocked it over with another thing invented by humanity. It's just crazy what human beings are capable of. Now, I don't want to sound like some everything's going to be great in the future, but I know it's a tragedy. I know it's a tragedy, but if you take a step back and think about it, it would be impossible as recently as 70 years ago, totally impossible. And now, boom, it's a remarkable thing. Sorry.
No, that's good. It's good to remind people about that every now and then. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Capitol Hill. We had a minibus.
Yeah.
Passed since our last episode of the Unregulated Podcast.
Are we allowed to call it a short bus instead of a minibus?
You can call it that if you want. I'm fine with that. So 6 months into the fiscal year, Congress has finished their work for the year prior and will now be working diligently to make it as painless as possible for members of Congress to get through the next $7+ trillion budget before they leave town so that they can campaign vigorously to get reelected to do it all over again. The measure passed 286 to 134 with not quite a majority of Republicans in support.
No.
Just short a majority of the GOP conference.
Yes,
the
majority of the conference voted against it.
What I meant.
Yeah.
Did I strike that? Reverse it.
Less than
a majority of Republicans.
Could be I heard it wrong, too. Sorry, go ahead.
No worries. And, of course, they violated the 72-hour rule, passed the bill on suspension, and it largely followed the spending guidelines that were set forth in the deal that McCarthy cut on the motion to raise the debt ceiling. So, in other words, not much different from whether or not Speaker McCarthy would have been Speaker still, with the perhaps the exception of it might have been done in January or February.
Yeah,
that's about the only major difference that that occurred. There were relatively few wins in there for conservatives. But at the same time, he's got a one vote margin. So
the thing is, he doesn't really have a one vote margin, right?
Right, exactly.
I mean, there are at least three different factions in the Republican Party. Right. Yeah. It's been for those of you not on the Hill, it's been a running gag for a number of years that there are, the five families of the Republican House, right? There's five factions, yeah. And everyone calls them the five families. He doesn't have a one. Everyone's like, hey, he's got a vote. Like, let's press it. I'm like, dude,
There's no pressing.
Well, in a parliamentary system, he'd be a prime minister of a very shaky coalition government, and that's just that.
Yeah, we've talked in the past about how we're sort of pretending that we're not a parliamentary system these days.
At some point, some brave person is just going to come out and like, hey, let's just have a coalition government. You know, we'll have the conservatives on one side and moderates, and then we'll have, the kookies, the left guys, what do they call themselves, progressives, communists, whatever the flavor of the day is. And then we'll have the libertarians, all 14 of them will be in a closet with their guns. That'll be that. I think it would actually work better if we acknowledge the separate factions. I really do.
Yeah, I'm going to wait until the election before I declare it'd be better. If President Trump manages to win and bring some coattails with him, I want a reconciliation bill that is just
as aggressive robust. As it can be.
Yes, just as robust as the last guy's, because at least in this reconciliation bill, all of the money won't go to large corporations, which is the ultimate irony of everything that's going on right now. Democratic Party is beholden now to very large corporations for the most part and hands billions of dollars over to them. We'll get into that in a little bit.
Tom Pyle, yes. Are you trying to tell me that Liz Warren voted for something to make more millionaires and billionaires?
That's the way I read it. I could be wrong.
Again, I want to thank Senator Warren for her excellent service as the oil and gas industry's very, very best lawyer before she decided to go to the United States Senate and mint more millionaires and billionaires with your tax dollars. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so other news. Of course, MTG, Marjorie Taylor Greene filed a motion to vacate chair. She's had enough. I don't think she's going to. I think this was more for her to raise money because immediately there was a lot of people that rushed to Speaker Johnson's defense, even the ones who were not happy with the outcome and voted against it and railed against it. And someone pointed out that this is the first Speaker of the House probably in history who is a genuine both social and fiscal conservative.
Well, I doubt that, but he's sort of like he's certainly the most legitimate one in the last 80 years, 90 years
than any other speaker, right? Like that's the.
Well,
the
I'm willing to bet that Sam Rayburn is probably two clicks to the right of Mike Johnson, but you know that's because he lived in a very different. I was going to say he lived in a different country. I've been thinking about this motion to vacate for a while now, and here's something I didn't fully appreciate. You know, I've been kind of waving it off and not worried about it. What I didn't fully appreciate is this, that the flip side of the coin of the motion to vacate is that it undermines the idea that the Republican caucus speaks with one voice. And we're back to factionalism now in the caucus. Used to be for a number of years when you were coming up, when I was coming up, that the rule was the majority of the majority, right? That the caucus spoke through its majority, and whether you liked it or not, everybody towed the line. The motion to vacate has changed that, and now you have multiple factions all vying for whatever. I'm convinced now. I wasn't convinced at the beginning. I'm convinced now the motion to vacate on the basis of one member is a mistake, and it has the practical effect of cleaving the caucus. I don't think that's good. And the funny thing is, if the Democrats did it, it would have the practical effect of cleaving their caucus too.
Yeah,
I didn't think that at first, but I now think it's been toxic.
All right. Well, here's some other fallout, if you will, in all of this. Another early exit here. Mike Gallagher, Congressman Gallagher. From Wisconsin, who is chairing the China committee, he's out of here. He's leaving early.
Yeah, and he picked the timing to make sure his seat remained vacant.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. It takes a very special, very deliberate act to pick the 19th of April, because Wisconsin law is such that if your vacancy occurs, literally, this is what it says. A vacancy in that office occurring between the second Tuesday in April and the second Tuesday in May of the year of the general election shall be filled at the partisan primary and general election.
Yeah.
So he could have picked any day before or any day after.
Yeah.
He picked the day that seat remains open until November.
Yeah. So. You know, I think he's going to go run for governor, but in between he's going to go work for Palantir. I think very highly of Congressman Gallagher, but this was a bit of legislative terrorism, right? And it wasn't, he didn't do it accidentally. That was purposeful.
And why I don't think Speaker Johnson cares about how long he remains Speaker. This was a statement from him. Over the past 7 years, Mike Gallagher has faithfully served Wisconsin's 8th District and all of the American people by his extraordinary work in the House, by courageously exposing the threat Beijing poses to the U.S., especially as chairman of the Select Committee. He is a trusted friend and colleague. Since we both entered Congress, it's been an honor to serve alongside him, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So. I mean, I agree with all that. He's captain of the United States Marine Corps. He's a man who deserves some accommodation, but saying that the legislative bit of terrorism is not legislative terrorism doesn't serve anybody. You should tell the truth, and the truth is he did this purposefully. He did it to damage the Republicans, and that's what it did, and that's that.
Yeah. And in other news, Kay Granger is done. She is not sticking around for the new budget. The chairman of the Appropriations Committee has announced that she would like to be relieved of her duties post haste. Will continue to serve out the remainder of her term. And already Tom Cole is out seeking the position of chairman of the Appropriations Committee.
Shocker.
Quote, I'm a budget hawk.
He didn't really say that, did he?
I'm reading out loud. I'm reading from his letter. I'm a budget hawk, and as chairman, I will ensure that we are not wasting and abusing. I believe I'm the right person to lead the Appropriations Committee. I believe he is the right person to lead the Appropriations Committee, but not for the criteria for which he claims. I literally almost spit out my coffee when I read his letter.
I would pay cash dollars to see Tom Massey run that committee. You got to be kidding. He's a budget hawk. Okay, I give. When was the last dollar you voted against in Congress?
Tom Cole. Budget hawk. All right, another blow to the Republican Party. Apparently, George Santos has had enough as well.
He's going to run as an independent. I saw that.
He will be, as he will. He has, as of now, I have announced that I am leaving the Republican Party and running as an independent. So
we'll miss him. I think we'll miss him. I don't know. Maybe we won't miss him.
We will miss him. We will miss him. And I don't know if you saw this. This was from CNN Sunday. Lisa Murkowski, done with Donald Trump, won't rule out leaving GOP.
Yeah, you know, I need to be careful here because the senator.
Why do you think I brought it up?
Because the senator in question and I may have already had some history. But first off, I want to. First. Anybody wants to understand the history, call me and I'll tell you separately. I don't want to repeat it and record. Yeah. Two things about that, right? One is I find that to be the least remarkable bit of news, put that in quotes, of the day. And second off, I just want to remind everybody, she's not a Republican anyway. She didn't run on the Republican ticket last time.
That is correct.
So what are we talking about here? We're talking about somebody who's an independent who's gonna maybe caucus with the Republicans, maybe caucus with, you know, her and Susan Collins are going to caucus together. I don't know. But this is the kind of thing you got to expect if you're going to, you know, the Republicans are going to take the Senate. You're going to have some of this thing going on, right? Whatever. I really am tempted to say something about the Alaska delegation, but I'm going to try real hard not to.
Yeah, just hold it back. Let's just say.
I'll say this. You know what? Let me just say this real quick.
I knew I should have just moved forward.
Jake Tyner is an extraordinarily competent staffer. That's it. That's all I want to say about the delegation.
Right. Okay, that's fair. I'll move forward. I will say that there are states in this great union of ours who should have better representation in the United States Congress, and Alaska is probably one of them.
I'm sure she's a budget hawk, Tom.
So there's a...
By the way, I'm a budget hawk as well.
David Trone is in a real bugaboo.
Oh, man, I was hoping you were going to bring that up.
I do mean to laugh.
I mean to laugh. Sure, why the hell not? It's funny. I mean, if it's not you.
I do mean to laugh. And the reason is because when I read this article, I thought to myself, it really doesn't matter because Hakeem Jeffries will rally around him if he hasn't already. For those who don't know, Senate hopeful Representative Dave Trone, who we talked about last week, running in the primary in Maryland, who was on the path to victory, I suppose, right? Or
yep.
At least
he was definitely going to win that Democratic primary.
Used the wrong term, meant to use the term bugaboo, and I will no need for to say what the word is he used, but simply that he was referring to tax rates stopping business investments, but didn't get the word right. Anyhow, like I said, you know, immediately apologized. I suspect that the Democrats will rally around him because there's a breathtaking double standard when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, if he was Larry Hogan, he'd be dead already.
It would be front page. It would be all over the place. And let me just give you a couple of very high profile examples. Do you remember? Does anyone remember Trent Lott?
Sure, man. Say something nice about a dead guy, you get in trouble. Although, in all fairness,
still alive.
Joe Biden said something nice about the same dead guy.
Oh, yeah. No, wait a minute. Trent Lott told that he said that when Strom Thurmond ran for president, we voted for him. We're proud of it. And the rest of the country had followed our lead. We wouldn't have had all these problems over the years. Republicans basically like completely distanced themselves from Trent Lott. And it was a matter of weeks.
It was a week before he was gone.
He was gone. Of course, everyone remembers George Allen.
Sure.
Senator from Virginia, who was a rising star in the Republican Party, who had a moment on the campaign trail that he probably regrets as well.
Well, in all fairness, and I speak as somebody who George fired, excuse me, asked to resign. George is a bit of a dunce, so he kind of got it. He deserved what he got. Got what he deserved?
Okay, just to some extent, perhaps, but...
Yeah, it was out of bounds.
Two high-profile examples of Republicans making similar errors in judgment and being thrown out mercilessly by both the media and their own. Compare that to Joe Biden.
Seriously, man.
Play the clip for me, producer.
Well, good to see you. As you know, I got a lot of support from you, Cindy.
That's where, and more to come, I think.
Yeah, so, no, I've had a great relationship. In Delaware, the largest growth in population is Indian Americans moving from India. You cannot go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent.
All right. So this was, I mean, look, there's a lot of Joe Bidens. There's a lot of them. This was just one of them. This was just one of them.
Can't go into 7-Eleven, Tom.
And the other one, and this was a very remarkably similar situation to Trent Lott. Do you remember Harry Reid's comments about Barack Obama, the candidate for president?
I do.
Yeah, so this was in 2010, where apparently Senator Reid, in a interview with Mark Halperin and John Heilman, remarked that Barack Obama, as a black candidate, could be successful thanks in part to his, quote, light-skinned appearance, unquote, and speaking patterns with, quote, no Negro dialect unless he wanted to have one, unquote.
Golly, these guys.
And Reid was convinced, in fact, that Obama's race was helping, so on and so forth. Now, he apologized. And, of course, Barack Obama not only accepted his apology, but wrapped himself around Harry Reid and said the famous, I know what's in his heart line, right? So if you want to, you compare and contrast here, I don't think that it's over for David Trone at this point.
No, I hope not. I definitely want him to be the nominee now because I think it's easier for Larry Hogan to beat him now. I definitely want him to be the nominee.
I wanted to go back and sort of.
I know, because you're Italian. You just can't resist picking at scabs. I get it.
The double standard is breathtaking, but I applaud the Democrats because it's win at all cost, right? Like that's kind of their thing anyway. So, all right. I do. I want to wish Kate Middleton, the Princess of Wales, a speedy recovery for her cancer that was announced this week. There's been this weird thing on the internet, like she was sort of missing for a while, and everyone was speculating where what's going on with Kate and this and that and the other. The royal family doesn't do a really good job with these kind of things. It doesn't make any sense to me why they kind of run around and try to like, you know, assume that no one's going to figure this stuff out. And then also she said that she wants she wants to manage this privately, which how does that work? Like
you're the Queen of England or the whatever.
You signed up for this deal.
Yeah,
like
you're the Duchess of Wales.
Private about it. So embrace it, own it, share it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know.
I feel bad, but you can't, there's no expectation of privacy here. Right.
Well, you know, that's a two-way street, dude. I mean, does she have an expectation of privacy? Probably not. But should people like shut up? Should people shut up? Yes. In other words, the problem is not just hers. The problem is all the voyeurs out there who are like, oh, the family, royal family. Don't get me wrong. I feel bad because she's another human being. But beyond that, she's got little kids, right? Beyond that, she's a person. She's a child of God, just like you, just like me.
Absolutely.
And that's...
It's kind of where I was going. You just said it better than me.
What?
There's just...
Can you cut that out and use it all the time? Holy mackerel.
That's the story of our life.
That's
right?
Good. That's good. What are you talking about? We're going to run that in commercials for this thing. You said it better than me. Mike McKenna for president.
Anyway, the point is that there's really, it's going to get out there. So yeah. If I were doing PR for the royal family, I just think I would approach things a lot differently than they do. They just tend to get themselves in a lot of trouble. DeSantis, did you see this?
No. What did he do?
Florida, this is from Reuters. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signs law restricting social media for people under 16. Signed a bill that bans children aged under 14 from social media platforms and requires 14 to 15-year-olds to get parental consent, a measure supporters say will protect them from online risks to their mental health. Measure requires social media platforms to terminate the accounts of people under 14 and those of people under 16 who do not have parental consent. It requires them to use a third-party verification system to screen out those who are underage, et cetera, et cetera. Originally, a bill passed that would have banned children under 16. This is important context, to which DeSantis vetoed, saying that it limited parents' rights. For, against, thoughts? The floor is yours.
Yeah, I guess I'm for, but I'm not all that excited about it. I get nervous whenever the state decides it wants to decide like how to raise the kids. And let me just be clear about this. I'm opposed. I am hard no on gender reassignment surgery and a hard no on hormone therapy until the person in question is at least 18, right? Because those are irreversible in a lot of cases and they're health things, right? This kind of thing makes me a little nervous. I mean, how different in scale, how different in character is this from saying, you got to send your kids to public school? You know, it's just,
yeah,
it's,
I mean, look, we are in an uncomfortable time right now, because what it is to be a Republican and what it is to be a Democrat are not lining up like in the traditional way that they used to. So I'm with you. I'm weighing the back end of the four. I have three kids who all three would be impacted by this. And I personally do not have them on social media. My wife has them on this thing called Be Real, which I wasn't necessarily for, but they're certainly not on the other more known sites. And so, yeah, I'm with you. Like, I'm sort of conflicted about it, but this is sort of the new, we have to grapple with this both as sort of freedom people and Republicans, because these are the kind of things that are, these are happening more and more, I guess, in sort of Republican.
All I know is this, and I'm a libertarian in some circumstances, right? All I know is this, if you limit autonomy, if you limit responsibility, guess what? You're going to wind up with less autonomous and less responsible people. And that's just the way the world is, right? You know, the way you make good decisions is by making bad ones first, or learning from other people's bad decisions. I get it. I understand. I also feel for children whose parents are either absentee, and that means literally away, right? Or children whose parents, and when I say children, I mean people under the age of 18, or children whose parents are themselves addicted to social media and sit there with their nose in their phones all the time. I can't tell you how many times I see that in public, you know, in restaurants, whatever, where the parents are sitting there and the kids are screaming at them for attention. I'm like, dude, this is crazy. Yep. So I'm sensitive to all that, and I get the feeling that somebody should be on those kids' side. Maybe it is the state. I hope it's not that, but maybe.
All right, this one, we got a roll here. This one, I've got, I call this one Ron Again, Off Again. Like that?
I guess. What is it?
Ron,
go ahead.
As quickly as she signed up to be a personality on MSNBC, the personalities on MSNBC got Ronna McDaniel canned.
Oh, she fired finally?
Yeah, the apparently it's, I don't know that it's official, but it's all over. It's all over the place.
All over but the shouting.
Yeah. So I find it ironic, and actually Phil Kirpin, of course, nailed it again. He said that the problem with Ronna is that the MSNBC folks think she's too Trumpy, and the Trumpers think she's too Romney. Right, which is exactly where she stands, right?
Yeah, I will say this, right? I've been watching this for like a couple of days, right? And I'm viewing it as a cautionary tale, and I'll tell you what I'm thinking about. You know, if Trump wins, he's going to be in the situation of having to staff an administration full of 5,000 or 6,000 people, appointees. And if Schedule F is successful, he's going to need about another 10,000, right? So.
That's a big if, though, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. But at some fundamental level, the reality of it is that it is a little warning bell that if you go in, you cannot expect safe passage on the safe conduct on the way out. You know, this thing. I get it. Ronald McDaniel could she could piss off a St. Francis in a church, but. I take a bigger lesson from that, and that is that the lesson is this: the dominant media and the dominant social structures are not ever going to accept any Trump people.
Yes, exactly. That's a great point. And I think my take on this is she should have auditioned a little bit first to show her
let everybody get used to the idea.
Give her a little, like, you know, to show them that she's got a little bit of Michael Steele in her, you know what I mean?
Mike Steele, who's he? Didn't he used to be somebody? One of my
she should have done a few freebies just to ease up
a trade association,
just to ease everyone's mind a little bit over there at MSNBC land. All right, I'm gonna start this clip with an oldie but a goodie. Hit it, producer.
Yankee Doodle went to town riding on a pony, stuck a feather in his cap and called it macaroni.
What the hell is that?
This is from the Washington Post, my man. Are you ready?
Yeah.
And here we are, full circle. Steel, cement, and cheese. U.S. spends big to cut these carbon footprints. Some $6 billion in federal funding will help reduce emissions from industrial facilities, including steel mills, cement plants, and a macaroni and cheese factory. That's right. Americans love their mac and cheese, devouring millions of boxes each year. But producing all that gooey yellow pasta takes its toll on the planet, Mike, since heating and drying the ingredients requires an enormous amount of energy. On Monday, the Biden administration took a big step toward tackling those and other industrial emissions as part of its broader climate agenda. The Energy Department announced up to $6 billion for 33 projects intended to cut carbon pollution from industrial facilities, including steel mills, cement plants, and a Michigan factory where Kraft Heinz makes its staple food of college dorm rooms everywhere. Now, E&E had a better headline. They said, holy macaroni, pasta plants among factories getting DOA cash.
Yeah.
But their article is behind a paywall. So listen, if any of you political reporters are listening, you should talk to the brass and donate access to the paywall to the Unregulated Podcast, and we'll be glad to feature more of your stories. But just can't do it. So,
it is now a good time for me to point out that we are now midway between the Kyoto Protocol and 2050.
Sure.
Okay. We are now midway between the Kyoto Protocol and 2050, which is, of course, its goal point for net zero. And not only are we not approaching net zero, we are continuing up the y-axis on emissions of all greenhouse gases. So, and this is like a monthly reminder. I've been doing it every once in a while. I want to do it again. Whatever you think the problem here is, the protocol and its successors, right, the Paris Agreement, is getting you nowhere. So you probably want to reassess, maybe introduce some rationality into the system and realize that in a world in which 3 billion people still have no access to actual electricity or even reliable source of fossil fuels, legacy fuels, affordable and energy fuels, you're going to need to rethink the strategy. And it doesn't really doesn't matter what Trump does, really doesn't. You've had Obama, you've had Biden, you've had the Germans, you've had everybody. Progress moves merrily along without any of that stuff, or despite any of that stuff. Sorry, go ahead.
All right, I've got a slightly different take, though. I agree with you. Does anybody see the problem with all of this? I mean, does anybody think that this is an appropriate role for the federal government?
Trying out macaroni and cheese? Absolutely, dude. Okay. Come on. It's right there in the Constitution, Tom.
I mean, this is okay, but
I'm sure the framers thought
to the point of insanity when we are giving billions of dollars to companies to do that which they should be doing and or wouldn't do otherwise if they didn't get the money. But
I'd like to.
Of course, there is a precedent for helping with cheese. Do you remember government cheese?
Sure, man.
I think a lot of our listeners in and around our age will recall fondly government cheese.
Are you kidding? My family still, whenever we do something like, buy some or get something from the government or whatever, we're like, ask some of that good government cheese right there.
Now, I was wondering in my research for the Unregulated Podcast, I wondered, do we still have that government stockpile of cheese?
I don't know. Do we?
The answer is no.
Oh,
we do not.
Oh, man.
But we still have a stockpile. It's just not owned by the government anymore. Apparently, Mike, there is still about 1.4 billion pounds of cheese in cold storage holdings in every given month, according to the USDA.
Oh, man. I want to point out, by the way, real quick, that all that cold storage, as a result of electricity, you're welcome. You're welcome.
It's a lot of government cheese, baby.
Forget the data centers. We need to worry about the cheese centers.
So cheese in the 1800s, cheese in the 1980s, cheese today. The government just can't help itself. All right, that is enough. I got to go. We are closing this episode with going back to our good friend, Vice President Harris. And finally, after all this time, she did it again, but this time she did it with climate change. Here we are.
A movement that has always been about the ability to see what can be unburdened by what has been. So I'm really excited about our work. I'm very excited about our work because we are showing that these were not just really good ideas. We are demonstrating that when we have leadership in the highest offices in the land, including in the White House, who believe in what we can do, and then when we push to make it so, it allows other people who perhaps before couldn't imagine it to now see how it works, and we are building then the movement in such a substantial way in terms of those who are coming into the rooms to be a part of what we know is in the best interest of obviously our country, but our world.
Ladies and gentlemen, the movement. All of the best of Kamala right there. Unburdened by what has been the cackle and the word salad, all wrapped up in the climate change bow, ladies and gentlemen. And that is the end of your 175th Unregulated Podcast. Have a wonderful week. Happy Easter, and I'll see you around the bend, Mr. McKenna.
We need to seriously think about changing the name of this to Unburdened.
All right, we're out.
Namaste.